Tonight at our Golden Moon Festival, we want to explore the theme of now. Certainly so many of you have contemplated the word now. Often you hear persons say that live in the now or don't neglect the now. Even the now is all that there is. It's the kind of talk that goes on at cafes or after a few drinks or some herbal supplements. You start to speak a bit metaphysically. The now, the magic of the now. I've got to get more into the now. And kind of everyone looks at one another and nods their head. Yeah, the now, that's it, the now. So let's talk about the now. The now very quickly becomes the past. But in any case, if we want to live in the now and not address our future, we're neglecting a huge part of our humanity. On Wednesday, during our workshop, we were discussing this point. Do you know who's most expert at living in the now? Exclusively. Animals. They consider the sensory impressions of the now, and they respond. Of course, you have some creatures that can instinctively acknowledge a future. But for the most part, animal life is all about the now. Plant life is about the now. Fish life is about the now. Human beings have the developed consciousness for trying to bring about the best outcome in the future. That effort to bring about the best outcome of the future is the best use of the now. In other words, the now is composed of what we're experiencing at the present, but there are two other things that also compose the now. Reactions from the past form the now. And what you're doing now for the future. That's also part of the now. So there's no way that a properly functioning human being can ignore the past or the future. Let's explain that more. The present moment is composed of reactions that we're bringing from the past. Those reactions have conditioned the present moment. And so the present moment is already, if you want to say, corrupted by the past. And based on that corrupted present moment, you project for the future. So you're carrying the burden of the past into the now as well as into the future. So actually, the now is not such an innocent thing. The so-called freshness of the now is laced with the past and pregnant for the future. But in any case, it sounds very trendy to talk about just be in the now. And often, such a statement makes us irresponsible. It's an excuse not to consider what is our prime responsibility as human beings, what distinguishes the human being from the animal. As we said, the animal is expert in living just in the present moment. Human beings, though, have higher consciousness for much deeper thinking. How to devise the best possible future. The ancient yoga texts, especially Bhagavad Gita, describe that for your best possible future, you have to deal with the past. You may say, it's just the now, just focus on the now. But each individual's now is dependent on the past. This is the law of karma. Every action has a reaction. So the now is composed of reactions from our activities in the past. So based on this now, which is already corrupted by reactions from what we've done in the past, based on that corrupted, so to speak, now, we march into the future. Now, is that future something that we understand completely, or we're just going to take it as it comes? The ancient yoga texts, such as Bhagavad Gita, instruct us, don't just take your future as it comes. As human beings, we have the responsibility to devise the best possible future for ourselves. Now, what could that be? What is the best possible future? When you're little children, if you have responsible parents, they tell you, think of the future, study in school, eat healthily, sit up straight. My mother would always tell me that. Don't slouch. Sit up straight, otherwise in the future, you'll have rounded shoulders. Anyone else have parents who told them that? Yeah. Rounded shoulders. A mother's job is never done, so. You're taught by a materially responsible parent to not play all the time. You have to study in school. You have to prepare to enter the job market. I often tell a story of how when I was maybe 9 years old and I was playing with my younger brother who was 7 and a half and my cousin who was 10. We were playing in New York City and we went to where there are railroad tracks and not to the main railroad tracks, but what's called a siding. There were some factories, and the factories had a railroad siding with some freight cars on. And there was no traffic whatsoever, no rail traffic. It was it's like in South Auckland, if you go, they have railroad sidings next to factories, and maybe once a week, the factory loads up a freight car and sends it somewhere. So it was completely safe. So we were playing on the freight car, climbing up on the freight car, and having a good time. Yeah, little boys having a good time in the now. That's the part of the bliss of childhood. Just be totally in the now. No consideration of anything other than playing. In order to play, remember when you were a kid? You really just get into it. No worries. No future anxieties, just get into playing. Kids like other kids who can really get into playing. So we were into it. And then we noticed a car with a red light on top drive up. And out comes this big guy with a badge on. Now, he wasn't a regular policeman. He was what they call a railroad cop. It's like a private security guy. So he proceeded to scare the pants off of us. Come here, boys. Do you realize what you're doing now? You have committed a crime. And now I have apprehended you. You know that word, apprehended? Very good. So as your parents have made sure you studied. I have apprehended you. Do you know what that means? We were just trembling. This means that you are now officially classified as juvenile delinquents. Youthful offenders. Give me your names. We very dutifully gave him our names. What is your address? Do you realize that all this information will now go on your permanent record? You are now all official criminals. We were just shaking. Oh no, we're criminals. Oh. Yes, what have we done wrong? What have we done wrong? How can you ask that question? What have you done wrong? Look at where you are now. You're at this freight car, committing crimes. We were just playing. We didn't know. We were just playing. Doesn't matter that you didn't know. Look where you are now. And now you are getting the reaction. You are criminals. So, I want you to go home and tell your parents that you are youthful offenders, juvenile delinquents. In the States, they say you have a JD card. This is before there were computers. JD card means you've been filed as a juvenile delinquent, youthful offender. So, go home, tell your parents you're criminals. I want to make sure you tell your parents. Don't make the offense even worse. So we started to walk home crying, and I was crying, oh no, our future is ruined. We're juvenile delinquents, youthful offenders. We have a police record. I was just 8 years old. We'll never be able to get jobs. Oh, what are we going to do? We'll never be able to get a good job. We've got a police record. Oh, no. My younger brother was crying, too. Oh, we won't be able to go to a good university. We'll have to go to just an ordinary school. So the two brothers, we consult each other. I guess we're just going to have to tell mother and father that we're criminals. My cousin, he was a year older, so he was a bit more shrewd. Nah, don't say anything. Don't say anything. But we couldn't do that. We were well-trained kids. So was my cousin, but he was just a little bit older and being a bit more shrewd. So anyway, we got home and we told our dad, we're criminals, we're so sorry. Our future is ruined. We won't be able to get good jobs. You told us that, and we still made a crime. So my father, he was a police administrator, so He had two reactions. He didn't show us one of his reactions. To us, he was very stern. What are you doing playing on freight cars? So now you have to be punished. All tomorrow you can't go outside and play. Oh, that was, oh my goodness, that was a huge punishment all day long. We have to stay inside on a summer day. The other reaction, he didn't show us. He was angry that the railroad security guard had scared us. So he didn't tell us, but he immediately got into his car to search and find this private security guard and get on his case. What are you doing scaring these little kids for? So we were concerned about the future. Parents had trained us properly. Don't get into trouble. You'll never get good jobs. You'll never be able to go to a good school. Now, what about our life as adults? How much of the future are we concerned with beyond simply finances, health, which is temporary? relationships which are temporary? Can we go beyond that? Where's the incentive, the impetus to go beyond that? Krishna in Bhagavad Gita gives a very interesting example. The spirit soul, Krishna explains, passes from babyhood, childhood, to boyhood or girlhood, to young adulthood, old age, and death. But death is not the end. In other words, as Krishna explains it, just like the baby has a future, the child has a future, the teenager has a future, the young adult has a future, the middle-aged adult has a future, the old person has a future, similarly, at death there's also a future. Why do you arbitrarily think that at death everything is finished, when all the other phases of the body have had a future? Now you may say, well, I don't remember that I had a future past death. In previous lives. But there's so many things you don't remember. You don't remember taking birth, but if someone fails to celebrate your birthday, you'll be very angry. You don't remember your birthday. But you want everyone to wish you a happy birthday. Suppose they said to you, all your friends and well-wishers, suppose they said to you, if you can remember what it was like being born, then we'll give you birthday presents. What would you say to that? But you don't remember, nevertheless, you expect a birthday party and birthday gifts. So you see, there's so much of life that goes on, and we accept so many things, even though we don't remember. You might consider that it would be very difficult to go on in life if we remembered the agonies of birth and death. We wouldn't be able to proceed with our mission. And what is our mission? Our material mission is how to live in this world for control and enjoyment. That's our self-given mission. So if we are remembering the horrors of birth and death, we won't be able to proceed with our mission. The ancient yoga texts, such as Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, describe that we have falsely taken on a mission. And therefore, Krishna has given us facility to live a dream, so that we'll get it out of our system. How many births, how many lifetimes will it take for us to get this false mission out of our system? That's up to every individual. We are actually pure spirit soul, units of spiritual consciousness that are temporarily trapped in bodies of matter in a material world. This is a temporary and very strange condition. That's why we can never seem to get it all right. We can never seem to get it all that we want. There's always something missing. We are spiritual beings embedded in a material atmosphere. Why is that so? Krishna is facilitating our dream to play in an imaginary world that's separate from Krishna. We're rebellious parts that want to do our own thing. It's like a parent who has children, and the parent tells the children again and again, "Don't go near the fan, little kid. Don't stick your fingers in the fan." But the child won't listen. The child has to experience. So if the parent is clever, what does the mother or father do? They pull the plug out on the fan, so the electricity is no longer turning the blades of the fan. And then when the fan is slowed down enough, they let the child stick his or her finger in. And of course, the child learns the lesson without actually injuring himself or herself. The child wouldn't listen. So the parent devises an experience so that the child learns a lesson without actually getting hurt. So the yoga texts explain that's the nature of this material world. It's a world where rebellious spirit souls can learn their lesson, but actually they're never hurt because they're not the body. They're not the mind. All the miseries of material life simply deal with the body and the mind, which you're not. Maybe you can remember a nightmare, especially if someone was in the room with you. You're lost in a nightmare. You're terrified. But the other person can see. You're simply laying in bed. You're having a nightmare. But when you're inside the nightmare, you're feeling things for real. A monster is devouring you. Your partner is next door with another. It's so real in a nightmare. But the person who's awake can see. You're just lost in a dream world. So similarly, all of material existence is a dream, but that doesn't mean it's false. A dream also has some truth to it, some reality. So the advanced yoga texts, especially Srimad Bhagavatam, describe that Krishna has emanated this dream world to give us facility for our mistaken desires, because we won't learn any other way. Not every spirit soul part of Krishna learns the hard way. Only a minority. So the yoga texts explain that the true minority group are those spirit souls that have chosen to dwell in the material atmosphere. The majority don't make this mistake. In other words, material existence is like a place of reformation. You have a mission. I am going to be the enjoyer and controller. You act on that mission and you see what the results are. And maybe after countless births, countless lifetimes, you reevaluate and you understand that the real mission in life is to harmonize yourself with the Supreme. The part always acts in cooperation with the complete whole. When we end our rebellion, that's when material existence ends. But we may think, no, I'm here now, let me enjoy now. But how long will you be here for? It doesn't matter how long I'll be here for. Let me just enjoy the now. This is very irresponsible. Even in terms of practical things, in this lifetime, we actually don't live like that. If your children tell you, I don't want to go to school, I just want to play and be in the now, you won't tolerate that. It's also illegal. They have to go to school. Or you have to homeschool them. Something has to happen. If someone has no money and won't take any steps to get money to maintain themselves, I just want to be in the now. You would consider that a very irresponsible, foolish living. So how much of the future should we take into account? Why is it that our future planning only extends a little bit ahead of us? We don't know the skills. We don't know the techniques for lifetime after lifetime of future management. But those skills do exist. Throughout the drama that you saw, you heard the Sanskrit injunction. Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Very short, pithy statement, which means now is the time for self-realization. Now has so many offshoot meanings in this Sanskrit statement. Number one, now that you've been through so many previous lifetimes, now's the time for self-realization. Number two, now that you've experienced life in so many different species, so many different forms, you've been trees, you've been cats, you've been fish, you've been monkeys, you've been cows, now you have the human form of life. Now is the time for self-realization. Number three, now that you've tried to speculate so intensely that your brain was about to fall out of its head. Speculating, why are we here? What are we doing? Now is the time to listen. And stop your speculation. Now is the time to listen to the perfect source of knowledge. You cannot create perfect knowledge because your senses are limited. Your senses are faulty. You don't hear what a dog hears. You don't see what a cat sees. So many other animals have sense perception in some way that is more extended than what human beings have. So now that you have speculated and speculated and speculated about what is the meaning of life, why don't you just listen to a superior source? So these are some of the meanings of now in Atato Brahma Jigyasa, this very famous Sanskrit statement. In other words, we need to consider everything that the present moment is dependent on and all the responsibilities that the present moment has packed into it. We can't be like carefree children with a childish, even animalistic conception of how to deal with the now. No. The now is full of responsibilities and full of potential. Part of the responsibility of living in the now is to deal with the reactions from the past. Every intelligent human being is concerned about the reactions to my past activities. A thoughtful human being, a wise human being, is concerned about his or her karma. I've done so many things in my attempts to be the controller and enjoyer in this world. What will be the reactions of all my activities? You might think, I'm just making my way through this world. What's the problem? But everything you do in this world is connected to someone else. There must be reactions. You might say, let me go for a stroll in the park. Whether you realize it or not, you're walking on the grass. And walking on the grass means walking on the heads of the grass. But you're thinking, I'm just having a good time in nature. But the grass, those are living entities. And you're walking on their heads. There has to be a reaction. What to speak of for the more severe things that we do, that the more severe things, actions that we do that impact other creatures. Meat eaters freely gobble up other creatures. What's the problem? I didn't do the killing. I just do the eating. What's the problem? But no. You implicate yourself in the conspiracy, in the crime. You're benefiting directly from the crime. And by the activity, you're encouraging the crime. So you also get karma. Not simply the animal slaughter gets the karma, but also the persons who participate in every aspect of the crime. Transporting, selling, packing, cooking, serving, eating. Karmic reactions. Obviously the most severe karmic reactions for those who do the killing. But nevertheless, everyone who participates is involved. That's one example. But we do so many things that we're not aware of what is the consequence. And we tell ourselves, well, if you don't know, then how can it hurt you? Just live in the freshness of the moment now. And then we wonder why there is misery in this world, why unexpected tragedies happen, even to persons that we think are innocent. Because we don't see this whole chain of action and reaction. Now, sometimes it's said that how can the law of karma be just if you don't remember the crime that you did? It would seem, yes, that for there to be moral education, you should remember that I did such and such activity, and now I'm getting the punishment for that activity that I can remember doing. So some people say that the law of karma seems to be incomplete because you should remember what you're being punished for. If you are very sick now, or if you get hit by a car, you should remember, this is because I did such and such. And then in that way, you won't do such a thing again. But the yoga texts explain that the law of karma is not about remembering specifically what you did wrong. The focus is on getting out entirely of the grip of the law of karma. In other words, you might say, well, if I remember what I did wrong, just like today, is it today? So many two right-of-the-way laws have changed. So you're supposed to know now. When you come to I tried to understand. When you come to a T, you have to wait. You can't just drive into the intersection. Okay. So you're supposed to know that. The law of karma is based on not trying to have a more enjoyable life materially. It's based on how to get out of material existence completely. Therefore, the important thing is not to remember exactly what you did wrong. The point is to get out of the whole system of karma completely. But if our goal is how to stay in material existence, then we would think, I want to know exactly what I did wrong at the right of way, so I won't get a fine in the future. And there are very intricate spiritual texts which can explain the actions that lead to certain reactions. But it's so complicated. So you might say, well, why does it have to be so complicated? We should just know what to do so that we can proceed on our merry way as controllers and enjoyers. But you see, there's a catch built into the karma system. The catch is, indeed, it's so complicated, and indeed you can't remember, because the whole point is not to deal with the system, but to get out of the system. I don't want to get out. I just want to deal with it. I want to learn the right of ways and all that kind of stuff. And so I can be the controller and enjoyer. But the whole karmic system is designed to frustrate your attempts to be the controller and enjoyer. And what did we say? Well, that's not fair. I want to learn how to control and enjoy without any reaction. That's my mission. But that mission is a deviant mission. So that mission in of itself will lead to suffering. So the point is not to remember precisely the particular thing you did wrong that brought about a particular reaction. The point is to give up the deviant mission and get out of the karmic web completely. But if we don't know that ultimate mission, which is to get out of the system of action and reaction, we'll think it's not fair. I'm being punished for something I can't remember. How will I know not to do that thing again if I can't remember the mistake I made? But again, the point is not so much to remember precisely what you did wrong, but to look at the overall mistake that you are pure spirit soul, you've trapped yourself in the temporary material atmosphere, in the karmic atmosphere. Get out of the whole atmosphere entirely. That is the real mistake, that you've entered into the karmic atmosphere and you're acting. So better to focus on that and not any little individual crime that you've done. Just get out of the whole criminal world in the first place. How we evaluate this karmic system and our participation in it depends on our understanding. What is our real mission and what is our perverted mission? When we don't understand what our real mission is and we're oppressed by a perverted mission to be the controller and enjoyer, we come up with so many delay mechanisms about dealing with the now. The Sanskrit injunction says, Tato Brahma Jigyasa, now is the time for enlightenment. And what is our response? Now is not the time. Why? It's not the time because I have to do this, I have to do that, I have to do that, I have to do that, I have to do that. We can evaluate our life. We were discussing this on Wednesday. And see, we have so many other priorities that we've constructed for ourselves. And therefore, we can say with assurance, now is not the time. As soon as we do that, we've made life's greatest mistake. We had a discussion on Wednesday, and I asked our participants, about 30 persons who had gathered there, what do you think is life's greatest mistake? And persons would come up with things like, life's greatest mistake is to be angry. Or life's greatest mistake is not to forgive. Or life's greatest mistake is to not seize an opportunity. Life's greatest mistake is not to love when someone wants to love you. So we discussed all those points. And then I presented what the yoga texts present as life's greatest mistake. In Srimad Bhagavatam, the advanced study to Bhagavad Gita, there it is stated that no greater mistake in life exists than to neglect our own enlightenment. No greater mistake exists in life than to have something else a higher priority than our own self-realization. So let us think about our life now and see how we may be committing the greatest mistake. We rationalize very cleverly. What was the mantra we made on Wednesday? Does anyone remember? Distracted, tranquilized, I want to rationalize. That is the... That's a good analysis of today. Distracted. The more distracted, the better. I don't want to think. I don't have time to think. And tranquilized. Who can face life these days without some kind of intoxicant, stimulant, depressant? Alcohol, caffeine, herbal supplements. on and on it goes. Distracted, tranquilized, I want to rationalize that. Well, you see, I should try to understand who I am and what's the ultimate goal of life, but it's just, I can't do that now, you understand. There's so many things I have to tend to. I got to deal with financial pressures, relationship pressures, social pressures, family pressures, the pressures of my own body and mind, all screaming in unison, now is not the time. So, how do we deal with this very difficult situation? A life focus can change in association of those who are inspired to make a deep transformation. If we only associate with persons who are just caught up in the very limited conception of the now, we'll spoil our most valuable human form of life. If we change the quality of our association, our consciousness will change. The direction of our life will change. So the greatest need in the world today is for our establishing a wisdom culture in which there is support for those who truly want to live in the now by understanding the now is pregnant with opportunities for the future. That your future can be so dynamic that you can actually transform the past. You can get rid of your past karma by proper activity in the now, so that you can move into a future that's unchained by the past. So these are the fascinating elements of life that the bhakti yogi deals with. Not simply how to have a nicer life in this world, nothing wrong with that, but you have to consider your future because you've had so many lifetimes. What is the most ideal situation for the living entity? Is it to be embedded in matter, or is there inconceivably superior pleasure to be had? This is what Krishna's trying to convince us of in Bhagavad Gita. You've got better things to do. And it's not all waiting for the hereafter. If you learn these principles of spiritual living, your present will be better, and your past will be dealt with. That's why at the end of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna makes the offer. Look, drop your concoctions, do things my way, and I take care of all your past karma. Is it a deal? And what do we say? Now is not the time. Let my karma come to me, whatever, you know. It's all part of life. Let nature's laws act upon me. Let birth, death, disease, and old age come to me. It's all part of life. Yeah. That's the way it is. When actually, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is giving us the keys for solving the miseries of life. But we don't want to listen because we're thinking, let's lessen the miseries. And that's what we'll call happiness. But to get rid of all the miseries also means to get rid of all the temporary happiness. So we think, but I want the temporary happiness, therefore I'll tolerate some misery. Two sides of the same coin, happiness and distress. You want to get rid of material distress? You have to get rid of material happiness. No, no, no. Let's not get rid of material happiness. So we'll make a deal. Let's lessen the distress so we can keep the material happiness. But the true goal of yoga is to get rid of not only material distress, but get rid of material happiness too. Now you say, wow, get rid of material happiness. Well, what kind of place am I at now? What's happening now? Now is the time to get out of here. Well, no, I hear they're going to serve a sumptuous dinner. I can't leave. What to do now? He's criticizing material happiness. No, there's nothing wrong with wanting to be happy. But we have to consider what is temporary happiness and what is lasting happiness. So when we say that the goal of the yoga system is to get rid of material distress and material happiness, the understanding is there that material happiness is such a flickering, temporary thing compared to real happiness. So Krishna invites us to happiness that has no beginning or end. That's something else. Whereas material happiness comes and goes, as you know. It comes and goes so quickly. And we get into such a tizzy. Remember what it's like? You get so giddy and tizzy. And often, when you're hit with sudden material happiness, you want to augment it with some intoxication just to drag it out, you know? And the letdown is coming, you know that. Still, it's natural for the human being to desire happiness. Our mistake is simply we don't know what is real, lasting happiness. So therefore, we get very uptight. We get very disturbed when we hear that not only should we give up material distress, but we should also give up material happiness. So Krishna has a solution for our insecurities. We don't like material happiness challenged. Krishna's solution is to give you a gradual program for inoculation with spiritual happiness so that gradually you'll relinquish your grip on material happiness. Otherwise, it's too much to expect of us all at once to just discard material happiness. We'll be happy to discard material distress, but why should we discard material happiness? We won't do it. We won't get rid of both sides of the coin until we taste something better. So that is the bhakti program. That is the Krishna conscious program. Give you something better, and you'll gradually relinquish the inferior thing. Very practical. Based on self-interest. We're not afraid of addressing our real self-interest. It's okay to be genuinely selfish. Genuinely selfish means to understand the self as spirit soul, part of the supreme soul. That's beneficial selfishness. Artificial selfishness means to think I'm the body and mind, I got to get everything to please my body and mind, as well as those bodies and minds that are temporarily in favor with my body and mind. That's selfishness in the negative way. But there is positive selfishness. Positive selfishness means actually selflessness. That I am not an independent entity on my own. I'm part of Krishna, and I'm meant to function in a relationship. Material life is because I've forgotten that relationship with Krishna, and therefore I struck off on my own, trying to control and enjoy in a dream world of matter. How can we get realization of all these things? There's a spiritual technology which will actually allow you to realize all these points that I've been making. And we hope that you all will avail yourselves of this spiritual technology. A prime part of that spiritual technology is sound vibration. not just any sound, but the sound of the Hare Krishna mantra, which is Krishna's gift to us as sound. Because with that right sound, we can adjust everything in our life thoroughly. We'll relinquish our grip on temporary material happiness. We'll open ourselves up for real happiness. And we'll be able to rectify our situation in this material world so that we're not striving and struggling so uselessly and foolishly in an artificial now, which has no idea of the past and no vision of the future. So yes, everything can be optimistic. Everything is actually upbeat for the one who has knowledge and acts on that knowledge. So please, let us think. Now is the time. Let's adjust our priorities and move forward. Now is the time. You can write down on a piece of paper all the reasons why you may have thought that now isn't the time. Write down all the excuses on a piece of paper and just crumple up the piece of paper and throw it out. We all have our excuses. I've got things to do, places to go, people to meet, money to make, parties to go to, partners to explore. Ah, no, 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 it goes. Traveling to do. I've got to get my overseas experience. People are going back and forth all the time, here, there, and no idea who they are or why they're here. Air New Zealand will advertise special fare to the USA. See the USA. Meanwhile, in USA, Air New Zealand is advertising, go to New Zealand, go to New Zealand, see New Zealand. Everyone's going this way, that way, this way, that way. No one knows why or who they are. Everyone thinks the other place is better. I remember some years ago when I was getting a New Zealand passport and I needed some pictures. So I went to a photo shop. I said, I need some passport photos. And so they just heard the accent. They assumed, we do American passport photos here. These are young ladies in their early 20s who are staffing the photo shop. So we do American photos, passport photos. I said, no, it's for a New Zealand passport. A New Zealand passport? Where are you from? I said, I'm from New York. New York! We'd do anything to go there. Why do you want to come here? Now, if I go back to New York and say, I'm based in New Zealand, oh, a heavenly place. We'd do anything to go there. That's the way it is. Where is the real place? The way the energy of illusion works is that it always makes people think there's a better material deal to be had somewhere. You have one relationship while you're exploiting that relationship, acting in that relationship, what are you thinking? Maybe there's a better one, right? Right? You don't admit that to your partner, of course. But you're wondering, maybe there's a higher quality in another relationship. And of course, as is popular these days, you may actually dabble in another relationship on the side just to check it out and see, you know, its potential while holding on to your main relationship. We're always looking for something better. Do we dare to consider the whole proposition of material happiness as suspect, deficient? Ah, that's scary. It's only scary, though, if we don't know something better. So Krishna proposes to give you something better, and then you'll relinquish the inferior thing naturally. That's the organic, holistic process of bhakti. So please consider these points. And I thank you all for your kind attention. Hare Krishna.